Do not attempt to change the channel.
All media are extensions of some human faculty.
Is books part of the media?
Media, we don't need it, do we?
Baby, this thing is bigger than all of us.
The media. A lot of you out there probably never even heard of the word.
Media is any form of communication. It can be radio, television, computers.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
You know, we live in the most mediated society in world history. You spend 10 to 12 hours a day with media. And so I think it makes sense to think about, in a sort of systematic and sustained way, our relationship with media.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Be the Media here on CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. I'm Marianne Vanderzon, and I'm here in the studio with both Neil Scobie and Joy Googler. Hello to you both.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And folks, the studio is full, and it is because this is a special day. And Joy, I pass it over.
On this day in 1989, Marc Lépine forever marked Canadian history by walking onto the campus of École Polytechnique in Montreal and opening fire on 14 women whom he killed and others whom he injured. We recognize this day in Nanaimo and across Canada as a day of mourning, but also a day of activism and anti-violence activism so that these attitudes don't persist. And today, we have devoted the full hour of Be the Media to talking about the issues that today raises, not only today, but the other 364 days of the year. And we will be talking to Leslie Clark from the Women's Resource Center, to Tracy Myers of the Haven Society, to Delaney Vallon, who is a student at VIU, and of course, Marianne Vanderzon as a women's studies prof and media studies prof at VIU, myself, Joy Googler, and Neil Scobie as our regular producer and the lone male voice in the studio today. So please join us shortly for that panel. And as previously announced, you're listening to CHLY 101.7, and this is Be the Media. Today's show is dedicated exclusively for the hour to the December 6th event and commemorative happenings around town, and we have gathered together for the occasion a number of women who are intimately involved in anti-violence activism and who offer services to women in our own city. The first is Leslie Clark. She is the executive director of the Nanaimo Women's Resource Society. She's been there for 5 years and moved from Seattle, where she worked with marginalized youth and a community advisory capacity on issues like homelessness and women's rights. We're also joined by Tracy Myers, who is representing the Haven Society, and she has worked for over 22 years as a feminist in the anti-violence field. She's worked at the Rape Relief and Women's Shelter in Vancouver in the early 90s, the Sandy Merriman Shelter for Homeless Women in Victoria in the 90s, Street Outreach for Aboriginal Agency in Toronto, also in that decade, and Nanaimo Women's Center in the late 90s and early 2000, and Haven Society for the last 10 years. She's been involved in Stopping Violence Counseling Program and the Children and Youth Who Witness Violence, current coordinator of services for children and youth at Haven. And she's also a spoken word artist for the band Tongue and Groove, an activist, a musician, and she is a mother of two young adults. And we are representing the youth generation with Delany Vallon, who is a second-year student at VIU in creative writing and journalism. She's currently working on Siren Songs, a book of poetry that adopts the points of view of common female brand names such as Barbie, Betty Crocker, the Starbucks siren, as a critique of pop culture. She's committed to social justice both inside and outside of her writing. And we're also joined by our regular cast member here at Be The Media, Marian van der Zon, who's a professor of women's studies and media studies at VIU, the author of work on pirate radio, and someone who's been very involved in women's issues as well. So welcome to all of the strong women around this microphone in this circle. I wanted to start by taking us back in time a little bit to 1989 and the day that we all heard the news about what had happened on the École Polytechnique campus. It came to us likely through television or radio. We at Be The Media talk a lot about television and radio as a way of communicating lots besides the fact and news. But in hearing what happened with Mark Lapine that day, what was your immediate reaction? Maybe Leslie, we'll start with you.
Yeah, actually, I had just moved from Vancouver to Montreal. It was my first year of graduate student. I'd been in Montreal 2 months, and there was a strike on with the telephone, so I had no phone. I was in this little apartment in a city I didn't know. I didn't know anybody. We had just started classes, and it's haunting for me because I remember about an hour and a half of sirens going by my apartment, and nobody, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't have a phone. And then, you know, somebody coming to my apartment explaining what had happened said that classes had been canceled. I was at Concordia University. But we all gathered at the university anyway because I think that we were trying to figure out how to place this. And immediately the conversation started. Like, what does this say about us as a society? What does this say about... So with male students there and female students that had come gathered at the university because we just needed to be with somebody. And it, you know, it was like, it was almost immediately there was that conversation about, you know, where do we take this? What does it mean? And I just sort of, you know, so for me, it's a very sort of haunting, you know, every year experience. As I remember feeling just terrified afterwards, like terrified even walking around the city. Like we just, it was so kind of just overwhelming. And it brings me back to that place in a way every year. And I usually sort of spend some time reflecting on that at this time every year.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting having somebody who was in the city mm-hmm. as it happened, because for many of us, we were further afield. Tracy, what was your experience of that?
Thanks for having us today, by
You're
the
welcome.
Way. It's nice to be here. I was actually living in Asia at the time, and news came to me through family members, but without any feminist lens or critique. There'd been this tragedy, students shot. It wasn't gendered at all. And so I didn't understand either how the media had represented it at the time, that it took quite some push from women to talk about the list he had, to talk about who was targeted and why. And that came to me at a commemorative rally back in Vancouver when I was working for Rape Relief and Women's Shelter, which was a very grassroots, radical, they had no government funding. And you know, it was sort of, there was a period in my life where I was sort of taking a lot in about what it meant to be a woman on the planet that had previously something that I hadn't digested, thought about, acknowledged. So it was part of my sort of awakening as a young woman to what was going on, what was happening to women, and how it was being framed in a very unhelpful way.
And in addition to the 14 women who were killed that day, he had a targeted list that was found in his apartment after he committed suicide that named a number of other women in high-profile positions who he called, quote-unquote, radical feminists, and who he thought had done he and all men a great disservice by their activism. So it is certainly about those 14 women today, but about other women who narrowly escaped similar fates. Delaney, when did you first hear about it?
Well, I was born in 1990, so I think I heard about it mostly when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I was lucky enough to have media-savvy parents who watched the news very often, and I think it was on the news that I heard of it as kind of a commemorative story on the news. And I remember it didn't fully hit me when I was that age because I was so young, but as I grew older and began to identify more as a woman, and that sort of began to sink in every few years at a different level. So I think as I grew older, the event sort of changed and had a different meaning, and I think now I can fully understand a lot better than when I first heard about it when I was 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Marion, where were you in 1989?
Well, I was in the middle of my teenage angst years, and I was, 15 years old, and you know, definitely a troubled teen. And, you know, I remember hearing about it, but more through the grapevine, and again, with very little analysis. And I think, for me, there was a real sense of isolation around the news and not knowing what to do about it, not knowing really who to talk to about it, not having that network in place. And in terms of emotion, two really overriding emotions, one of fear. You know, at 15, you're looking to your future. That's that sort of coming of age and already, you know, yes, you know, an opinionated young woman, clearly ready to step out. But, you know, this knowledge, too, that there are outside forces that, you know, in this instance that are clearly not wanting women to step out and own their power. But not only fear, but also an incredible amount of anger. And again, that might be connected to the teenage years that I was in, but certainly I remember anger being really an overriding force in terms of the sense of, you know, the general you out in society, whoever you may be or whoever is embodied by that, are not going to prevent me or other women from doing what I wish to do and owning my own power. So both fear and anger simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. It couldn't help but provoke a response across the board, a very personal one, I think, for many people. I was returning from just finishing exams at Carleton, a couple of hours away from Montreal, going back southwestern Ontario to spend Christmas with my family. And I remember hearing the news with my parents in the living room and sort of losing my breath for a few minutes, feeling nauseous, feeling terrified, feeling angry, as you've said. My father's reaction was interesting. He couldn't understand why nobody had intervened sooner. Why did he get to 14? Why hadn't men stepped forward to protect women? And he was from Germany, a kind of some old school attitudes with respect to men's role in protecting women versus harming them, of course. And he was very angry. He was fearful for me as a female student, even though I was in journalism and it was actually dominated 80% by women. So we didn't have the same kind of statistical anomaly that the engineering students have as women students in that program. But I remember feeling as a new student from a small town moving to a big city, taking women's studies classes for the first time, finally finding other people who gave me the vocabulary for what was going on and a solidarity and a sisterhood and a kind of, wow, this is part of something so much bigger that needs to happen.
I felt like that was an axe that broke the ice. Like, I needed now to not just give thought to this, but to take it to the streets. And today, we're taking it to the airwaves, I guess, first. And we're thinking, here we are 23 years later, taking us back first to that historical moment. But now, thinking about those 23 years in between, that's a lot of vigils, that's a lot of candlelight, it's a lot of mourning, it's a lot of sadness, but also some change, hopefully, and some positivity. So I'd ask the panel to talk about some of the ways we've marked December 6th, not only because it's now an official day through Parliament recognized for this, to commemorate the tragedy, but also tied into a whole 16 days of activism, women's right as human right to not experience violence, and also thinking about the people that have attended some of the events you've gone to over the years. How have you seen reactions evolve and change? Maybe Leslie, can we start with you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as much as the event resonates, you know, with my personal experience, I think that, you know, looking at it, you know, over the years, I feel as though, you know, there was a huge response in that moment, and there was a lot of dialogue, and then it's without ever having, but then it seemed to be going off in different directions, and it, without ever any kind of sense of, I've never felt there was a sense of resolution around this. I know that, you know, I started going to the vigils when people were really focusing on those women. And then over a period of time, you know, the families requesting that that no longer be the case, that they would like, you know, action related to it. They didn't want their daughters to be endless martyrs. And so, you know, then looking towards that action piece. But I think over time, like, the dialogue is just kind of, and I feel that as long as it's unresolved, you know, we're leaving ourselves open. It actually creates a sense of fear in me sometimes that the dialogue dissipates. And if we're not talking about it, if it's not in the forefront of our thinking, and if we're not sort of imagining where we go with this, you know, it's concerning for me. It's really sort of deeply concerning that, you know, it seems to have, a lot of work was done. There was funding given to women's centers to address some of these issues. And then it was like, you know, sort of amnesia across the country. And it's like, no, we're done with that now. We're good.
Leslie, I'm curious, what would resolution look like for you?
I think that for me is an ongoing dialogue, and that dialogue is supported, and that we begin to see, you know, that we're bringing people together to talk about these issues, and we don't have a situation where a government, you know, is sort of stating that, you know, equality's been reached, everybody go home.
So to continue the dialogue and continue the conversation in an active way.
Yeah, very much so.
Leslie, what has Haven done to mark the event? Tracy, what has Haven done to mark the event over the years? And have you had particular women share their responses with you that we can share with our listeners?
Well, frankly speaking, Haven has often showed up at the events that the Nanaimo Women's Center has organized. You know, traditionally when I was at the Women's Center, that was part of Women's Center's funding. There were four things that women's centers needed to do to get government funding. There was a newsletter, there was March 8th, there was December 6th. One more. International Women's Day, December 6th, the news, Take Back the Night. And these were the events that funding was sort of based on. And then the government, in its infinite wisdom, decided that Haven and transition houses and women's centers were a duplication of services and cut all centers' funding across the province. And so without money to do something like organize an event, it takes money, it takes staff to do that, to advertise, to organize, to get materials, to get coffee going. And you know, so Haven has often partnered with the leadership of the Women's Center, who, you know, some years was difficult, and with the university. You know, I think over the years, early in the 90s, the gatherings felt extremely powerful in terms of some of the spoken mic opportunities for women to get together to talk about their experiences. the focus would often be on the women murdered, but it was an extend. It would extend to that, to violence in general and what women were experiencing, and they were powerful public spaces. But I noticed in myself starting to get very frustrated with it, and started to draw a line, or like a connection in some of my spoken word with, you know, Remembrance Day and a poppy, and enough of this. Oh, it's so sad. Oh, and let's light a candle, and like, let's take over some buses. Let's take over the media. Let's do, like, they were just so sad, mm-hmm. and it's like, where is the anger? Where is the energy to say mm-hmm. what? Like, how do young women? How do we pass this along? That this has happened. That this event happened, and how it was erased from memory, as you're saying, amnesia. So, it's started to be an event that wasn't evoking something that I really found like. Worthwhile mm-hmm. almost to gather for. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's helpful that the families are saying like enough, and that, and this needs to take a different format. If we are going to mark it as a day to remember, what are we really wanting to remember here besides this event, this happening? And I think one of the most powerful gatherings I was at in Victoria was a group of First Nations women started to speak about the race and the class of the women murdered and other women murdered, and that it doesn't get nearly so, not in a sense to blame those 14 victims, but to talk about who are women important enough to remember and who are women mm-hmm. forgotten. And that was a political shift for me as well early then, having that stated. And you know, women weren't a homogenous group that is experiencing violence in a homogenous way. So
yeah, especially in a province that has the dubious honor of having the Highway of Tears, and having so many First Nations women in particular targeted on the downtown east side, and across the province, across the nation, and it is a really important issue, and I want to address that question a little bit further. But first, to hear from Delaney in terms of maybe previous events you've attended. You're a new student, so maybe for the first time you're imagining yourself being in a classroom when somebody broke through the doors and would take that kind of behavior to the most extreme length possible. But how are you feeling about it now?
Well, I was fortunate to grow up with really helpful teachers, but I always felt that growing up it was kind of talked about on a really general level. And it was only in university that I really got to feel the experience of speaking about women's violence with people who were passionate, and I felt that a lot of younger students kind of brought that passion forth. And I think, as Leslie was saying, with the need for dialogue, it wasn't until university that I really connected with people and was able to sort of understand it on a deeper level, and to meet others who felt the same and sort of bridge those connections. So I do think there is a dialogue kind of budding, and at my generation at that level, but it takes a lot of courage and bravery to speak about occasions when you've been oppressed, or when you see that kind of oppression. I think it takes that sort of courage to bring that forward. So it can be difficult at times.
Just recently, there have been two women who have done so in my classes. One at a story slam, where she had 10 minutes of a presentation in which she talked about being the victim of violence. And another woman who's writing nonfiction work and a full-length memoir about a number of different instances of it. And it is a very courageous act. Marion, how have you celebrated, isn't the right word, marked this day in the past?
Well, certainly in the years, you know, as I was coming into university in my early 20s, I was going to a lot of the rallies. And even at that time, there were still a lot of women gathering and, you know, to remember. And at first, it was empowering in the sense of gathering women together and seeing that strength and solidarity. But also quickly, that dissipated, because there's a lack of empowerment there to just gather for that day, and then everybody goes home, and then what do you do with that, right? So, you know, it's, Tracy, you were talking about this in terms of, you know, we have to do something, that we need action, we need to take over the media, you know, what, and also contextualize it so that it's more complex and bring in things like class and race. Because even when we talk about taking over the media, you know, I look around this studio right now, and, you know, I see that we're all white women, and, you know, we're all educated women. women, and you know, it's so there. Even when we say we have to take over the media, we do, and yet there are clearly still challenges to that. You know, it's one of the reasons why I've been an advocate of pirate radio for so many years, because it allowed me to access communities like homeless populations, for example, and say, come and speak your truth and speak your stories over the airwaves. And so it's important to take over the media, and it's also important to recognize that many people still have barriers. And it comes back to, Delaney, to what you were speaking about, in the fact that it takes courage. And, you know, the more oppression a person has seen in their life, I would say then it takes yet more courage to be able to overcome that. And not only speak your truth, but it takes a period of time to find your voice and mm-hmm. find your truth.
And we are giving voice to these issues. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 Be the Media. When we get back after this song, we're going to resume the panel and talk about some of the voices that haven't been heard and some of the ways in which the media is influencing this conversation. Stay tuned.
Where do I put this fire? This bright red feeling. This tiger lily down my mouth. He wants to grow to 20 feet tall. I've left Bethlehem and I feel free. I've left the girl I was supposed to be. And someday I'll be born. Out of her mouth, and I've left Bethlehem. And I feel free. I've left the girl.
And you are listening to Be the Media on CHLY. Today's December 6th panel is talking about anti-violence activism in our own city and across the country. And part of what we're doing is a campaign online on the Facebook page for the Status of Women. And the address there, if you'd like to take a look, is facebook.com/VIU Status of Women. There you can see that we're running a Speak Your Peace campaign in which you finish the question, or the statement, I should say, everyone deserves to learn because you
finish that sentence, take a picture of yourself holding your answer, or if you'd rather be anonymous, just your answer, post it to our timeline and share it with others who believe in this cause. And many of those people, as many as we could fit in the small hot studio, are around the mics today. Just a reminder to those of you who may just have joined us, Leslie Clark is the executive director of the Nanaimo Women's Resource Center. Tracy Myers is representing the Haven Society. Delaney Vallon is a second-year VIU student. Marion Neal and I are your regular contributors to Be the Media. And I want to talk about media now, not only the campaign that we are doing to get things going online, which was in part following a lead by McGill University, who did one called We Still Need Feminism Because, and then carried the conversation forward to a live event that we'll be having this evening from 7 to 9 p.m. at Fibber McGee's on Selby Street. But the media all around us constantly, it's a place of inspiration, it's a place of harassment sometimes, of bullying, of continuing violence instead of working against it. Delaney, I want to start with you in terms of how media it can have both positive and negative effects, your own interaction with it, particularly to do with this issue.
Well, there's a lot of different avenues that you can look at with media. For example, there's with television or movies, that kind of stream. A lot of violence against women that you see in the media is so casual, and it's sometimes viewed as humor or said that it's in a satirical kind of way, but it's still questionable whether that's true and if that's helpful at all to women. I think we see a lot of that on primetime TV for sure and in movies on a regular basis. And I think it's just sort of being aware of the effects that has and whether or not it's the most helpful thing, and to sort of create a dialogue around those issues. And on the web, it can be difficult because of the anonymity. You can be recipient of a lot of harassment on there. It is also a segue into more positive activism. You have shows like Feminist Frequency, where I think it's Anita Sarkeesian, she explores sort of tropes with women in the media, and she sort of unpacks the different labels and the different roles that women play in the media and kind of critiques them in her way. And it really provides some excellent resources for women and creates great discussion around those issues. So,
I think another issue is video games, because instead of just watching the screen, you're actually engaging in it. And games like Grand Theft Auto, where there is violence, not just against women, but in the whole game, but there is violence that players are actually interacting in. And it's, I think that, I don't know what the studies are, but I can't help but think that that would... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the other thing with video games that's interesting to note is the fact that a lot of video games are played online. And with a lot of my other female friends, and it's also, you can find a lot of evidence on this in online forums. If you have a very female username, that is like a username that really pegs you as a female, you can sort of be targeted as that kind of, as a woman, and be harassed that way. So that's often another thing we see online a lot.
That's funny you should say that, because this isn't a video game, but I used to play a lot of online chess. I quit because it was a bit of an addiction. But I did once have a username that could have been taken for male or female, and I did get abuse when other players thought that perhaps, like, because I had a sort of a non-gendered name, and they thought, well, maybe they're playing a woman, and I did receive verbal abuse.
One of the experiments that could be fun to try for listeners out there is if you log on to a site such as Reddit, which is a very popular online forum, if you create a username for yourself that's obviously male and create a username for yourself that's very obviously female, make the same comments on the threads like you usually would and see what kind of responses you get, just to sort of experience the differences. And I think that can be really helpful in... and educational learning, the kind of thing that a woman can endure on a daily basis on the internet.
And it is a forum for experimentation. We see it in other kinds of sort of anthropological or historical scenarios when you go to, for example, Holocaust museums, where you're asked to go through a particular exhibit and experience it as someone who is gay and Jewish, or somebody who is a child and Jewish, or somebody who's not Jewish and would have been in a position of power during the Second World War might be German or might be a soldier and so on, and see a situation of extreme violence from 360 degrees. And I don't know that we can really fully empathize without literally walking in those shoes. And the web does facilitate that, whether it's Second Life or it's a username. But why would a purely female name inspire permission for violence in a way that men doesn't? I think that's kind of the key to this argument.
I think connected to that is, Delaney, what you were talking about in terms of the images and the modeling that we see in the media. So there's increased violence right across the board, and clearly that's become a lot more graphic. But I think also what has been really normalized in the media are instances of women being controlled, women being possessed, women being stalked, and yet it's exhibited as though it's romantic. And a lot of the women characters, this is appealing for them, these kinds of behaviors. And it's these kinds of behaviors then that we see over the media that normalize the behavior at large. And in fact, then in everyday, our lives, we see women actually wanting that type of behavior because from the men in their lives, because it may indicate that they care or that they're interested. But it's a very... shallow type of display. Yeah, and display in terms of what behavior can be in relationships. And it's certainly become very pervasive.
Yeah, and I think another issue with that is you look at role models and the kind of women that that are looked up to, and that can be either fiction or real celebrities. And if you look at some celebrities, just as a mention, recently Katy Perry and Taylor Swift have both come out to the media when they were asked questions in separate interviews as saying that they support strong women, but they are not feminists. So I think there is kind of a problem with that term and the understanding of it. So I think that's definitely an issue when you have these really prominent figures not really understanding the issues, and, there's really a lack of dialogue around that, for sure.
How did it get to be the new F word, right? How did it get to be the thing that's bleeped out of conversation to say that you're a feminist? I remember having a conversation with a coworker in my first year university. I was a lifeguard, and I was responsible for organizing a team. And one of the young women said to me, "I heard you said you were a feminist. Really? Do you date as a feminist?" And I said, I said, "Yes, I can say it out loud and I can still date, And I said, she said, "Well, what does it mean to you?" And I said, "To me, it simply means always having choice. Choice over my body, choice over my career, choice over my partner, choice over any health concern, choice over whether or not I have children, choice over how much I get paid, how many jobs I'm eligible for, every program that I want to get into." All the same choices that men are afforded without thinking about them as choices. And she said, "Well, that doesn't sound so bad," And yet it is a word. The other debate that's online with celebrities at the moment right now is with Rihanna, right? She keeps getting voted as biggest celebrity of 2012. And yet she had such a public situation with an ex-boyfriend, Chris Brown, and the violence that we saw her face after a date with him. And there was this huge uproar online. People were disgusted. Now she's back with him. All is forgiven. She's writing love songs to him. And young women, very young women, some of them not even teenagers, look up to her, sing her songs, some of which have been touted as empowerment songs for women. But she's not living the kind of truth that most feminists would want her to live, and perhaps not being that role model that we'd like to see for young women. And I guess that leads us to the next question for the panel. I'm thinking about the next generation, the kind of world we want to leave for our daughters and our sons, the kinds of changes in media and in society that we want to see. We had an excellent speaker here last week, Jackson Katz, talking about what he's doing working with men in particular, from the Marines to the NFL to the NHL to boys in high schools, to try and change attitudes that they might have towards women. And it was a powerful and inspiring talk, but it also exhaustively outlined the number of venues that we have to be vigilant to watch, and so many different places that we need to have a presence to change attitudes. I'd invite whomever feels ready to talk about this to come to the mic. Leslie?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, something that's important to keep in mind that Tracy was touching on earlier is that, you know, we need to remember that women and women's experience, this is not a homogenous group. And I think one of the things is talking about access and, you know, access to education, access to media representation, access. And I think that, you know, that needs to be part of the discussion too. And as you noted, kind of the demographic even in this room, is how, what is our responsibility, each and one of us, to ensure access to others? And I think that, you know, equally that sort of, it sort of needs to be happening at the same time. Because certainly when we talk about feminism, that was the feminist dialogue that I came out of in university, was how do women of color experience feminism? How do, you know, and, you know, it was noteworthy that feminism took a real slide and became that F word shortly after December 6th, mm-hmm. was when we saw the sort of, you know, it disrupted some of the conversation. But I think that, you know, looking forward, I think that we really need to look at this in terms of, you know, it is complex and it is broad, and how, what are other people's experiences, and, giving other people, you know, understand we have a responsibility to leave room for voice, you know.
Well, I was just going to mention that regarding media and its pervasive messages, I'm a bit of a cynic. I don't really have much faith in big media as far as what's released on in movies or in commercial radio or in TV or advertising for that matter. But I think the best defense for that is media awareness taught to children. Mm-hmm. That's something that's completely in our control. And if they are aware of the manipulation and the false representation in a lot of, not all of it, but, you know, there is a big chunk of it that portrays relationships in a negative light. I think if they are schooled and they are aware of what to look for, I think that's powerful.
And looking to some of the independent media, PBS, NPR, CBC, I mean, CBC is not independent media, but it's not commercialized mainstream media. You are more likely to find a documentary. You are more likely to find left-leaning ideas in those places. And independent media, campus stations, pirate radio, so many places where we can have conversations that should be mainstream conversations, but we need to have them maybe in the subversive underground first, and then, you know, they will leak out. And there are venues, I think, seeking them out and, you know, exposing our children to those and starting conversations with them, not giving them answers, but seeing what questions they provoke, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to resume the question on a positive note, but before that, I think we need a little more music and some fresh air in the studio. So we'll be back in a few moments. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 Be the Media.
Men to violence, and it's met without protest, with barely a sound. And what does it mean that even though the media may say, hey baby, you've come a long way, the statistics on rape and violence against us climb higher each and every day? What does it mean that the last time I checked, the transition house is still in full use, women and children escaping domestic violence and abuse? It means find what brings you joy and bring that gift to the solution. Because if we can't dance, we're not part of the right revolution. Our work's not done. No, we're not done. Our work's not done. We're not done yet. What does it mean that the spin on feminism has meant it's now known as the F word? Something so completely absurd, like we already got what we've been fighting for, as if freedom is found and showing our cleavage and Botox will bring the revolution. What does it mean that cosmetic surgery is a billion-dollar business, consuming our minds with matters of the flesh? Well, 50% of 11-year-old girls think that they're fat, committed to the idea of becoming smaller, becoming less. It means... We need to hang on to hope. Don't get defeated. Find reasons to laugh. Seek the sacred. Don't get depleted. Because our work's not done. No, we're not done. Our work's not done. We're not done. Yet. What does it mean that only mothers think of childcare and women still make less? That women and children live in poverty while tax cuts go to big business? What does it mean that so many women in the downtown east side were missing for so long, while the police weren't even looking for them, they never even tried? What does it mean that a search on Google routinely pulls up pornography, and women and children are actually bought and sold in the global sex trade industry? It means, find what brings you joy and bring that gift to the solution, because if we can't dance, we're not part of the right.
From the album Shedding, that was We're Not Done Yet by Tug and Groove, featuring Tracy Myers. Tracy, what was the inspiration behind that song?
The Nanaimo Women's Center, actually, and an acknowledgement that the work isn't done. Right? We're nearly where we need to be, in spite of the government perhaps telling us we are, and that the Women's Center is sorely, as all women's agencies are, under-resourced. So it was a spoken word piece written in honor of their work and for an event that they were holding. It might have been International Women's Day. In that little small living room, us all packed in there. You remember that? Yeah. Many, many events in that little small living room.
Yes.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the resources available to women who have experienced violence in this city, or for anybody who knows somebody who is in that situation and may not be aware of the ways in which we can help each other. Both of you, Tracy and Leslie, are actively in the trenches every day offering these services. Can you speak a little bit about your organization and what you can offer those people?
Well, at the Women's Center, we have a fairly broad mandate in that we provide services for any sort of circumstance that a woman names that she comes in, any women in the community. So wherever that woman may need help accessing resources or sort of putting things together, sometimes, unfortunately fairly frequently, that is around violence or the sort of spin-off effects of violence for women and their children. We defer to Haven Society when that is the case, because that's their role and they do it well. And that's sometimes though women will not directly access Haven because it may not be possible because of the perpetrator. So sometimes they're coming to us and then we're contacting Haven. And so I think that, and we have, you know, a lot of our, you know, with most of the women we serve, violence is somehow woven into their life somehow. And what we're seeing at the other end are conditions of poverty and marginalization. And so we're dealing a lot with that, you know, helping women sort of improve their lives for themselves and their children.
And Tracy, can you speak a little bit about what these women might experience if they came to Haven?
Yeah, a lot of people think of Haven Society as Haven House, obviously, the transition house. So that is a resource that we have for women and children who are not safe in their homes or experiencing abuse at the hands of a landlord, perhaps. So it's a shelter, yet limited bed, and a good idea to phone first to see what the wait list, right? We've been full for the past 3 months. And then we have a broad range of services. So community-based victim services is for any woman who has experienced a crime where a power-based crime is involved. And this does not have to involve or trigger an RCMP file. They can get support and counseling, accompaniment to hospital. We connect with a program called the SANE Nurse, the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, brilliant island-wide resource that can attend to you at the hospital and do an examination properly and with a lot of care and concern. We have a women's counseling program, fabulous supportive counseling that's free for trauma of any kind. A lot of women are seeking support for childhood sexual abuse or childhood trauma that has just made life difficult because of what has happened to them. And that program offers a multitude of groups to women, a drop-in group on Thursday night called Weaving Our Voices for a woman who identifies as having experienced any trauma. We have Strategies for Empowerment, which is a brilliant six-week sort of a course, really, on what trauma is, what it does in your body, triggers, how to cope with them. It's quite a brilliant program. They have four stages of groups in the women's counseling program that you can move through to a moving beyond trauma to a reclaiming life group. And just recently, some women who came to that group started their own group after to continue, which was really a fabulous thing. We have an outreach program that links also with the Women's Center and has a Monday group. And I work in the children's program, so we provide support to children and youth 3 to 18 who have experienced violence in their home or a dating violence experience. And we do outreach to schools to talk about domestic violence.
Quite a lot of the situations that we encounter on campus are a function of dating scenarios, where students have come to me and said they have had somebody slip something into their drink, date rape. As a result of that, they've experienced it at the hands of a boss, the hands of a landlord, as you said, or something from their past, their families that have come back to haunt them and during these years when they're students. To Marion and Delaney, do you know about services on campus, what we can offer there, or directing them to the services in the community? Have you had any instances where you've had to investigate this on behalf of someone else? Because I think that's one of our jobs. It's my job as chair of the Status of Women for VIU, is to make sure that those services are widely announced and available.
Yeah, there was a case where a friend of mine was actually having issues with a boss, and she had spoken to me about it, and she was also fortunate enough to have some connections at school, some teachers that she could trust. Really fortunate at VIU to have a small campus with teachers who take the time to get to know their students a lot of the time. So she spoke with them, and they set her up with the human rights group, and she got her resources through there. So she was taken care of with them.
And there are trained counselors on campus, which we often would walk a student to their offices. We know if we just send them that they may somewhere in transit change their mind or feel unaccompanied, feel unsupported. And so better off to lock the door behind you and go with them and stay with them, given the stats around the number of people who actually report and follow through. Marion.
It's unfortunate, you know, that the numbers are so high. And I experienced this particularly in my first year women's studies course, because often we talk about, of course, these issues, and I ask the students, what are your experiences like? And the thing that's unfortunate is that a great majority of the young women, primarily young women who are in these courses, have experienced something themselves personally, and if not personally, then they certainly know, they have friends, family members, etc., who have experienced violence in their lives. So, you know, I think as we were talking about earlier with the media and the role modeling and the modeling we see just in life generally, you know, we still have a lot of work to do. We're not to you know, ride your tailcoats, Tracy. We're not done yet. You know, there's clearly a lot of work. And in terms of resources on campus, Delaney, you mentioned some. And one of the things that has been lacking is a women's center at VIU. And so UVic has had a very strong women's center that then is very much student motivated. And so it's a different dynamic than having to go to your professor, where a lot of students, that's difficult for them to do that. You know, they see their professor in a role of authority. Mm-hmm. And to have a women's center then on campus can be, the door can be opened up that much more. And there was an attempt, and it was motivated in part, I think, by women's studies courses, where a women's center was started for a short period of time at VIU, but it wasn't sustained. So I think that's what we need is, that would be very helpful. So I know, Leslie, you wanted to weigh in, and then Delaney.
Yeah, just talking a bit about the Nanaimo Women's Center actually started at Malaspina. That's where 31 years ago. So it started there. And I think through, you know, student involvement, it worked its way down, you know, sort of into the community and dealing with sort of community issues. But we see ourselves as still very much, we have always got one or two practicum students from VIU in the center. And we would definitely... you know, like to see more and more students involved. I think it's very helpful for students coming. We usually get them from either nursing, social work, child and youth care programs, and it's very important in how it informs their practice to come into the community and see what's going on. But it can also go the other way too, and we, you know, whatever sort of support the Women's Center can give, you know, to having something happening on campus as well, because that's, you know, where we came from originally.
Before I went to VIU, I was a student at SFU, and they had a women's center there that had resources such as books, and they had couches, and it was this space that felt really safe, and you could go in there and talk with other women and have tea. And I think there is definitely a need for that on campus, just a space that feels safe and that you can reach different topics there.
Yeah, and it's not only about having that space there in times of trauma or violence, but I think it moves us beyond that to what we were talking about earlier, so that women can gather in that space and find strength and community and connection and alliances, and then be able to start new projects and continue to move forward. So I think it really opens the doors to, you know, to continuing the discussion, the conversation, and moving us into action.
I know I attended Carleton University, and we had a women's resource center there that was very instrumental in my early years as a feminist. The good news is, last night at the Christmas event hosted by the president of VIU, he announced that VIU would be getting a health clinic, and that he has found the foreign outside sponsorship monies for such a thing. It's been long lobbied for, and I'm hoping that there will be a component of that that deals with mental health, as well as offering women in particular services. And I'm not sure how that will roll out or when, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Just as we wrap up this edition of Be the Media, I'd like quickly to go around to our panelists and to thank them in advance for the time that they've spent on this issue, not just in the studio, but year-round. It can be a thankless job, so I'm here to thank you personally and to encourage you and to invite you to say one thing that you hope people remember from this hour. And Delaney, do you want to start?
Sure. I think it's important to consider that if you believe in equal rights for men and women, regardless if you're a man or a woman, then you're a feminist, and speak your piece.
Thank you. Leslie, anything that you want to particularly stress?
Well, I just want to thank you for having the conversation, and thank you for organizing tonight's mm-hmm. event. Thank you again to Tracy for organizing around having Dr. Katz come here. It was a hopeful evening, or what was it, an afternoon? It was an afternoon. And I guess that's the thing, is that hope is really wrapped up in having this discussion. I think that we, you know, in order to move forward and to experience what that's like, this needs to be ongoing. So thank you for having the conversation.
Great. Tracy?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight at Fibber McGee's. I guess for myself, Jackson Katz's visit is still very much in my mind. I heard him three times. So I think I would invite men to join us, to recognize that feminism is the best thing that's happened to you as well, and that ending violence is not only maybe your responsibility, but your joy to do with us.
Thank you. Marion.
I guess just picking up on what everybody said, I'd like to, you know, echo the idea of hope and also the idea, Tracy, that you talk about in terms of taking part, you know, and I feel that very much as a white woman, that I need to step out and take part in conversations about race, for example, right? This is important to open these spaces. And so it's just to, you know, certainly remember what's gone before, but also to continue the dialogue, because it's, I think it's that is empowering and then leads to action and shift and change for all of us, men, women, beyond.
Neil?
I, too, would encourage men to analyze and look at this much more closer. That, you know, you have, I'm speaking to you out there, men, you have mothers, sisters, girlfriends, friends, wives. It affects them, and it affects you, too.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone. I guess my wish for this day is that we have less bystanders by the end of it. That anywhere you see violence towards women, towards children, towards your fellow human being, towards men, that you step forward in some way, knowing that you are not alone, and that this has to end. And that for every year that we recognize December 6th, the stats go down instead of up, and that Haven will not be filled like next year. And I invite everyone, please, to join us to continue this conversation this evening from 7 to 9 p.m. at Fibber McGee's on Selby Street, the old train station. We have the whole upstairs. There'll be a slideshow. There'll be an open mic where we're sharing inspiration, mentorship. There'll be free food, yes. There'll be some music. There'll be solidarity, sisterhood, networking. It will be an opportunity to be hopeful, I hope. And also, to, if you can't make it to that event this evening, do go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/VIU Status of Women. Post your answer to the question, to the statement, everyone deserves to learn because, and keep fighting the good fight. And now we're going to say thank you to Leslie Clark, the Nanaimo Women's Resource Center, to Tracy Myers from Haven Society, to Delaney Vallon, VIU student, to my elaborate and fabulous co-hosts. That is Neil Scobie and Marion Vanderzon. I'm Joy Googler, and we're going to go out with a little R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Thank you, Joy.
Thanks.
Be the Media is brought to you by the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at VIU.
How does that grab you?